This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
I went to my boss before. I knew him or her one-on-one, and I come up with a decision. Now, it's not so easy. Now, I got to talk to everybody in the team. Or even worse, I have to get the team together and facilitate a discussion on their peers. How am I going to do this? And what if people don't like my idea? They make it happen. Only to them hearing that's not what management wanted. Thinking they're safe, acting based on it, just to get a slap in the face afterwards. Happens all the time.
If being agile will not lead to people being more relaxed and happy at work, what is it then?
As a decision maker, how do you know everything? How do you know what the customer is thinking? Do you actually know what's happening on a technology level or digital opportunities, AI developments? Overarching governance and steering has to happen. This is when I start getting bad looks from colleagues, right? All those new work coaches creating this company purpose out of our individual purposes. These are absolute, from a psychological view, no-go zones. Why is it unhealthy? I feel I'm 100% part of that system. Every inch of my body supports the system, so I'm going to give it all. I have worked late. Vision is abstract, a little unrealistic. That's fine. You start removing the cognitive barriers, self-limiting beliefs. How do I feel, think, perceive the world differently from somebody else? That has the biggest impact as a leader. It's not solely up to you to make things successful. You're in it together with your team. Don't be afraid to ask for help.
My purpose is to help professionals connect with themselves and with others. Therefore, by the end of this episode, I'd love to know, do you feel more connected? Dr. Stephanie, I'm very excited and curious to know more about your work that we're going to talk and dive deep into in this conversation. And the first question I'd like to ask you is, from your work, I heard how much is it important, you said, for a leader to start anything with a clear intention. Why is that?
Hey, but that's a very specific thing. First, thank you for having me at your podcast. I did have a quick look in the episodes you have recorded before, and I appreciate the focus on more of the psychology of the work in the working world. Now, why did I say that leaders need to start things with a clear intention? When I work with leaders, right, as an executive coach or as a consultant, I have the honor to actually be able to see how things evolve. So I understand where the leader coming from, certain decisions, let's say change has to be made. And then I observe the leadership behavior and observe the effect, impact it has on the people. And this is where very often there's a big mismatch between what the leader actually intends and what the outcome really is. And why is this? The clear intention the leader would tell me he or she has, right? No, of course, you know, the objective is clear. I know where I want to go to. So I'm pretty clear on my intention. Well, really, are you? Let's talk about the intention, and let's try to fast forward and look at the impact this intention will have. So if I come from a strategic intention, or I say I want to develop my company, we got to be faster, Or I would even say I want people to take over more responsibility. I want to do this hand in hand with every employee. I want them to be empowered. That sounds like great intentions, right? But very often, from what I see, they did not think it through from A to C to Z. What does it actually encounter? And this is where the intention then starts to stumble over certain consequences that that we would foresee. So for instance, we have an intention saying, wow, in this packet, right? Stephanie, help me. I feel like people are not taking ownership in this company. I need them to do so. And, you know, new work, we want this, right? We want that modern workspace. Why is this? Why don't people take ownership? Why do they not act the way you expect them to act? Well, I told them to, right? So that is the superficial level of intention. We go one step below and said, well, what exactly did you say? And how did you behave? What happened the last time when somebody came up with an initiative? Or what happened when somebody actually went ahead, took a risk, or made a certain step that didn't go exactly as you seen it going? How did you react on this? And then we're talking right into behavioral dynamics, how do we shape behavior, and talk about consequences. And at some point, the leader is going to tell me, well, this is not what I want. It's not what I wanted as an outcome. Okay, then let's go back and talk about intention. Let's talk about what outcome do you really want to see? And then shape the intention from there. So I think that I know your focus is a lot on inner work, right? And I get that part. And I do see it as very important for a leader as well to say, if I believe I have a certain intention, what does that does to me? How does that change my understanding of my role as a leader? Do I need to correct? Do I need to step into a different place mentally in order to make that change happen? And I think this is important. However, I've worked with leaders who do not do the shift because they simply are not ready to, or they don't want to. And I feel that's something that has to be respected. You can act out of your emotions, right? In a clarity, you can do this. You can also do it differently. You can also put together a rational, what do I need to achieve for this company? And how do I do it in a way that it makes sense for people, that gives people orientation, and that I set them up for success? Honestly, I worked with leaders that deep down say, not 100% sure. I think this is the best thing we can do, right? We give it a try and it works out great. It's fine, right? You can have some insecurity. You can accept that there is ambiguity, that you don't have 100% of the answers. You're not even sure that's the right direction to go, but you believe this is the next best step we can do to figure things out. And when we talked before, and really the question prompted to me, in a world that is characterized by change, by excelling change, by insecurity, ambiguity, whatever have you, in the clarity might be a goal we won't be able to achieve in any situation, right? If the complexity simply gets out of hand, or it's going to be too big, we won't see this, we won't have the clarity to act, but we can always take a decision and say, next best thing, this is how we're going to start. And from there, we go and step by step chip away what's in our way, remove one impediment at a time. Intention, it's very important, but not always about inner clarity.
Let's start now with the intention from your books. What do you intend for people, or you wish, let's say, for people who read your books, and what kind of transformation you'd like them to have after reading them?
Well, that depends on the book. It's actually a good question. And sometimes I am confronted with this saying, you know what, not every leader, every situation, I would recommend my books go from A to, start with this book. And then that's not the case. It's more where do you stand and what you need as a next step. One easy choice to make, or something that's pretty clear when to recommend it, is the Agile Culture Code. So if you are a leader or a change maker, you're somewhere in HR and you feel like we need to pick up speed, we need to increase the agility in our operations, from business agility, strategic agility, down to having a workforce that is highly adaptable and flexible and proactive, looking for opportunities on the market, etc., then I recommend the Agile Culture Code for two reasons. One thing is, actually, there's not too much out there around business agility and so on. It's all important and gives some good guidance. There are some good models out there, but if we make it or not is decided in the everyday action the people are taking, the dynamics on the team level, the unit level, and the company level. And that kind of action, this small, tiny decision we take before we act in a certain way, that all boils down right to...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Psychology. How do we take decisions, right? What is our behavior based on? It's not always a cool directive and being more agile. It comes from history, right? And it comes from, yes, it comes from adaptability. The better I am to adapt to circumstances, the more stable are my adaption methods because they're well established for the current situation. So here, trying to start by setting people up for success, not saying agility, you know, you put this out there, that's where we want to go to, but what do you guys need? What does every individual in my company need to be able to meet the challenges that market is throwing at us? People can start looking, right? So setting people up for success would start pretty concrete, easily, I would say, with simply increasing transparency. I work with companies and leaders tell me, well, people don't want to change. They don't want to do that. Yeah, they just want to keep doing what they're doing. Yeah, obviously, because they've been successful so far, I wouldn't change either. If I'm successful, why would I want to change? But they might not know that the circumstances around them changed. So really what we have to create is transparency where people see or start recognizing I'm still okay, right? What I'm doing is it's not wrong, but I see, you know, some things happen with a customer I didn't even know about. I could adapt, right? I could talk to the customer a little more to try to find that out. Good. That's the right step. Go from here. This is what transparency does. People start thinking themselves and they start recognizing the need or the opportunity for change. Transparency goes along a very long way, something people really underestimate. And that's, again, in the book, transparency is not just, okay, let's, you know, publicly default to open, let them see everything. It's about having people also be able to see things from end to end, see where things are coming from, understanding the why, understanding what's happening, understanding that goes a little bit to the leader's intention, right? How clear is it? How clear is the intention I see in the leadership? Do I know where they want to go? Why? What the real agendas are? It's a huge, discussion point in every hallway, in every coffee kitchen. What are they thinking about? What do they really want to achieve? That's part of transparency. And also part of transparency is to get or to be in contact with an echo, with some resonance. So start seeing there is a change. It's true. You know, my customer has asked for something different, or I kind of notice, you know, people go to our competitor for something, which they used to come to us. So now I make a change, come up with an idea, some change, just a calling on my customer. Is it going to lead anywhere? Does it have any effect? And this is now what is absolutely crucial for me to be able to know and understand in order to adapt. So I start calling the customers a little bit more frequent. What's going to happen? Can I pick up the phone and ask, you know, the sales department, did we get any new business from these customers I called more frequently? Yeah, actually, you know, here, three things. Okay, that's what I continue. Sales tell me actually no, and one of them actually pulled out of the deal. I would have to rethink. It's really, you know, contact. Am I asking the wrong questions? Do I talk to the wrong people? Is that really my focus area? Then I can start learning. This is what agility is. And I still changes, figuring out it iteratively. What can I do? What can I do different to adapt to be more successful in the changing circumstances? And that is one out of the elements I describe in the Agile Culture Code, which really tells me what do I need to enable? What do I need to create as circumstances where my people can start being successful in an environment that requires agility? So that is that's a framework I believe that helps, especially if I think I'm doing the right thing as a leader, or I feel like we're in a good position, then go check, right? Just take the TC model. It's three elements, nine components. Just go through them, right? They're check questions, and I'm sure you'll find one or two blind spots or a mismatch where you think, well, I'm all good on that one, but your people might agree. Great. You know, let's identify and let's remove this very impediment in order to move forward. Remember the second part, what I put a lot of effort into this book. And I know it's also one of your areas of interest is what company culture, right? What is this? Can I influence it? Why and how? And can it change? What can I do? Where are the restraints? What do I need to consider? There, put some effort in trying to really paint that picture. If you want culture change, what does it actually mean? What can you do? What can you not do? And what does it boil down to? Spoiler alert, boils down to my behavior as a leader and the way that I set people up and control the consequences they'll face. You know, consequences, not in terms of punishments, but in terms of resonance. You know, what's the impact? What happens when I start behaving in a different way? So that's a pretty straightforward book to recommend if you want to transition or you would like to focus on culture, you want to foster agility, that would be a good starting point.
If you are enjoying the Core Impact podcast and feel inspired, let's connect on LinkedIn. You can search for my name, Omar El-Mamlouk, or click on the link in the description. I'd love to hear your thoughts or collaborate on projects around mental health and well-being at workplace, inclusive leadership, inner leadership, and the future of work. Let's co-create impact together. Stephanie, while you're talking, there are many things that I thought about. I'm interested to ask you. I'm thinking which one to pick, to be honest. And let's say you said what agility is, you said, right? So what is not agility, or what are the 1-3 top misconceptions about agility when you talk to people, you find?
That's a good question. I would say from two angles. One thing is, and it usually comes like with a little wink, if somebody, or if we start working with a company and then the CEO pulls me aside and said, we've seen that. People are not prepared. It's not the, you know, it's not the thoroughness that I would expect from my C-level or from my people. And it comes with a wink of an eye. I guess that's agile, right? The other way around, you switch priorities, you just get a call, I sit together with a leader, a boss call saying, discontinue that project, we got to start something else, hang up the phone, and you could just imagine how this person feels in that very moment. They're discouraged, certainly frustrated, a project you invested in for maybe years, you got people excited, you might have convinced yourself to be excited about it, and now it's discontinued. Oh, okay, well, thanks for telling me. And then again, you know, looking at me with a wink saying, I guess, there you go, Stephanie, right? That's the agility you wanted. Ugh, you know, that's not agility being not thorough, being unprepared, being too eager to decide on changes, or too sporadic, too reactive. That's not agility. Maybe that's the good distinction. Being reactive is good, but it's only part of agility. If you simply react to things, I like to think of a fishbowl or an aquarium. You just snap against the glass, and the fish are they're going at each one. Where do they get to? Right? Where? What's their way? What do they achieve by just erratically moving around? Or another? Actually, this is my favorite metaphor, which I know has been an old metaphor. It doesn't matter. So you know, you're at sea, you're in your boat, and you have the sail set. Now you're just going to adjust it to try to get the best winds, or is it rather you got your compass, you got your north star, you know the direction you want to go to, you believe in something, then you go adjust the sails in a different way. You stay on the path, however, and this is where agility comes in, not by constantly changing the direction you go to, but being actually very clear about the direction you have, but being in getting there, you know, like moving around obstacles, adjusting practical honesty.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Strategic level to try to achieve where you need to go to based on the things that you encounter or things that change around you. This is the biggest... That's already two misconceptions, right? It's not changing directions. It's actually changing to stay on the direction you took. The other thing is being unprepared and spontaneous. Know that it's not agility. It's not agile. And then you get a third thing coming up. And this is that big mix-up, which I believe is probably a Dach aspect, right? The German-speaking countries. I don't see it too much in the international environment, this whole new work idea, which we mix up, right? We put everything in this idea, we abuse it, we take it in the wrong direction. It doesn't matter. Intentions, by the way, are clear, right? We want to make work better. We like people, so we want to make sure they feel comfortable. That's the at least the German new work mentality you often encounter. And then they say, well, that's agility, right? No, it's not. It's great if you people are, like, you know, happy to go to work and have a nice fruit basket and play soccer during their break times. That's not agile, actually, not at all. So that is a misconception. Agility doesn't always lead to the expectations we have around new work in terms of people are more happy. People are maybe also more resilient or more relaxed. You know, start wearing their sport shoes and stop wearing a tie. Agility has really nothing to do with any of those. That's the third big misconception and the tooth you have to pull. That might not be the direction, you know, for you, if that's what you want.
Would you like to tell me more about the third one?
The new work?
Yeah, I mean, how do you see it in practice? Unclear, let's say, the new work with agility. if being agile is not or will not lead to people being more relaxed and happy at work, etc., what is it then?
Okay, yeah, that's a good question that also forces me to be a little bit more specific on what I mean. So we can take, like, we'd have to define first what we mean by the whole new work idea, but I try to address it from a different perspective. So from organizational and occupational psychology, we have decades of research that give us insight into how does the workplace need to look like? How do tasks need to look like? How do roles have to be cut so people, or we maximize satisfaction, motivation, resilience at work? We ease the stress load. We ease the emotional strain. We have that research. We can comfortably stand on and apply it. And now here's the thing where, and there is some sort of a common ground, some new work ideas around finding more opportunities to express yourself, express your own interests at the workplace. Great, right? It goes down to intrinsic motivation. Go for it. I don't care if you call it new work or not. If people are able to express what they care about or take over an initiative they're passionate about, let them do it. Might lead to an increased agility. It might lead to them just feeling better or even to a better workplace. This is good. And if you look down to the characteristics of the workplace, it gets a little bit more, more tangible and a little bit more juicy. So let's look at one basic human need of autonomy. Could look at the self-determination theory. That would, you know, tell us something about what do we really need to come up with or to be motivated, to have that energy to bring in motivation. Or you look at the job characteristics model, another very good and useful model from occupational psychology, autonomy. You'll find this popping up everywhere as a basic human need. We would like to feel effective. We want to feel in control of what we're doing. You will also find, revisit that TC model, which is called, it's essential if people some degree of autonomy to act. And now looking at new work, a big idea is the whole idea around self-organization. Have teams self-organize. Or how about servant leadership? Why not start, you know, command control? Why not as a leader just simply step back and serve the team, bring them coffee, ask them how you can support them, remove some patterns around them, servant leadership. The idea behind it is the same thing. You give control in the hands of the people, give them the autonomy, give them the control, the self-determination to do what they think is right. You hope it's actually what the company needs, right? That's a small gap that servant leadership kind of ignores, but where agile leadership might, you know, add a certain element to it. So this could be a new work idea of self-organization, but, and here's where agility comes in. If you look at it within the agile analogies or the range of methods that are described to be agile, as in Scrum, for instance, again, at heart, or you look at the Agile Manifesto, is always worth a read. If somebody hasn't looked at it, helps you to understand the original thinking around the agility as we know it today, right? Some roots go back much further. But here as well, it's a self-organizing team at the heart of the organization. Now the ideas, and I carefully link back to the TEC model, gotta ensure some transparency. So if you want a team to really self, okay, step back. Because that is something I see in practice and it's very amusing. So working within agile transformation, and then I work with HR, for example, who are usually on fire. New work and agility and self-organizing teams. And then they're very proud, right? See here, so this team is really self-managing. Oh, is it? That's great. Tell me about it. Yeah, so for example, before, You will have to check your vacation and planning with your boss. No more. Now you self-organize, you self-manage around your vacation schedules. Thumbs up. I think this is good. I don't want to say, I don't want to, talk demeaning in any way. This is a step in the right direction. Instead of having to ask the boss for approval for every little thing, I can now deal directly with the team, which brings the decision closer to where the action happens within the team. That's a good thing. That's self-management. Or the team starts to self-manage where which task is going, how they want to cut the roles within the team. All this is great. Those people are doing the work. They probably know best how the work should be done to be successful. So all this is very good, that self-organization, actually on a pretty good and high level. The team really decides over the how of the work, the when, the where. This is all good. And that's why it stops for a lot of companies. So really what we do is we take the management out of leadership and let the team do it themselves. It's pretty nice for the team leads that say, you know, I went on vacation for 3 weeks and I come back. There's nothing in my inbox. There was all great. Said, you know what? This is an achievement. This is good. So what's your next step? Well, you know, see if they need any support, or maybe I can organize a workshop or do something around Brazilian support. And that's great. It's very nice of you to think that way about your team, right? How about a new coffee machine, etc. But what the question they don't ask is, I understand the team is self-organizing, so I got some more free time. What do I use it for? And this is then where really agility comes in, because what does agility ultimately want to achieve is your company be more successful. So now the hard work starts for you to think strategically. That you know, my people are self-organizing. How does that help the customer? How? Got to answer that question. And then might you put a little bit of different impulses into the team. And this is the one distinction that I feel people are making, but it's crucial if you truly want to support agility. And this is to go beyond self-managing or self-organizing into self-steering. So the whereas the people at the edges of the organization, those are the people closest to the customer, closest to the market.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long distance relationship, becoming a first step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
They have ears and eyes. They know what's happening around them. They're the ones that get, you know, just interesting comments the customer just made that might actually be the future directive of where your strategy needs to go. Just simple things. You would never hear about it. You're sitting in the boardroom and having all those important discussions. You don't know. You don't know what's going on. You also don't know if the people are facing critical issues. Something changed, some regulation change, for example, and it definitely blocks their work. These are the people that see directly, where is the impediment? They also hear directly, what does the customer want? Or how do my ecosystem is changing? Do the suppliers change, right? Or their needs? Or is there any new technology that pops up that I should include into my work? And this is where agility says, you cannot steer this just from the top of an organization. Not only because you're sometimes far away from the branches, you're far away from where the action happens, but also it's extremely complex. How do you going to do this as a single person, a single decision maker? How do you know everything? How do you know what the customer is thinking? Have you talked to the suppliers? Do you actually know what's happening on a on a technology level or digital opportunities? Did you read up on the last AI developments? No way any single person can do it. So this is where we have to rely on our workforce. If you have 100 people, great. If you have 1,000 people, imagine that. Imagine the potential behind it. And then you enable these people to listen to the market, to observe. And now, and this is where self-steering comes in. I heard something from the customer. I go back and call my colleagues and said, guys, this might be important. You know what? I heard something similar. Okay, let's sit together. Let's put together a strategy. I think there's a simple change we can make. You go ahead and do this. This is self-steering. You have the autonomy to decide, to make a decision, not about how you do your work and when and where you do your work, but what you actually do. That changes the scope. This is the latest when management gets very nervous because, you know, we give up a whole bunch of control. Oh my gosh, they started changing the strategy. The website looks different. What happened, right? But this is self-steering. And now if we're smart, we have a system in place that doesn't just happen and the team, you know, goes, congratulates themselves and then sits back and just keeps doing what they're doing. And a few months later, management comes, discontinues that because there's no effect. That's wrong. So you got to enable the people to be on alert, to be able to monitor and track the successes of the little changes they're doing. Again, transparency. So this kind of team who might not would have to call their bosses, right? Hey, boss, how are the numbers looking? Bad. So how about giving that team access to the numbers, how they develop in real time? So they can go and track every little action they're doing and self-control. That is self-steering, right? It's just coming up with ideas, running with it. It's steer yourself. Listen to what's happening. What's the effect of my work. And then again, you know, this is where agility is an incredibly useful tool. You inspect and adapt, you inspect and adapt. But then, of course, you have that angle of an organization that consists of not just one team, but different teams that start following the market, following the signals of the market. So they might end up running into pretty different directions. We might lose a lot of synergy. There might be high amount of customization that is expensive. It's inefficient. We cannot run. We cannot control anything centrally. So that comes to its own cost, right? And sometimes it's worth it. Sometimes it's not. But that is where some sort of overarching governance and steering has to happen. This is when I start getting bad looks from colleagues, right? All those newer coaches. What does that mean? Now you want top-down leadership, command control? Yeah, I do. Just to make sure things are not going out of control, things stay efficient, the company has a certain line. We talked about the direction. You know, if we start adjusting and reacting and adapting, this is good. But if we lose the shared goal, if we stop focusing on that, we might just become irrelevant, inefficient. We lose the force we have as an organization that we, you know, could put together to be make a true impact, a true change if we don't manage to pull together and follow a shared vision at the minimum. Yeah. So this is where I would see those interlayers. I don't know if I took it too far, your question.
I like it. Let me try to, it's not an easy thing, but in one sentence, what I understand, let's say, if I understand the core in one sentence, is the important thing for a leader, coming back to the clear intention, is to keep making sure that the team, they have the autonomy, they know how to do things, let's say, and when, etc. But it is clear for them, what are we doing? Where are we heading to? What is our North Star? And why are we doing things? And keep communicating with the team and with the customers and all our other stakeholders to always adjust based on that, based on the changes and based on where we are going. We want to be in the end.
Exactly. And, you know, like you've seen, that requires different leadership styles. Servant leadership goes a long way. If you have highly competent people, if you set the people up for success, like you have, you know, the agile culture code in place and you got motivated, smart people, it goes a very long way to just simply be that servant leader. But it's not enough. Usually you get to a point where you need more direction. You need to change gear a little bit. And that is a very ideal situation, having your highly competent, highly motivated teams and the setup in the organization that allows for transparency, collaboration, etc. It's a little bit of a, I don't see it very often. We're not there. So no, it's not time yet to just sit back and start serving the team coffee. I'm a little provocative.
Yeah.
I understand the ideas of most of it. I also see reflected in, you know, what I referred to before, the basics we know from occupational organizational psychology, they have a lot of space in the ideas of servant leadership and the ideas of agility. It goes a long way, but at some point, we don't self-serve in an organization. Why not? There's no purpose for an organization to serve. It's not to make a difference, to serve a customer. And that comes with requirements. It comes with some asks.
Mm. Dr. Stephanie, I think you already answered, but you can also expand on it. How can a leader balance between giving freedom, like not controlling too much, and at the same time not giving so much freedom that people don't feel supported and don't know where to go?
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I like the question also because the idea of, again, new work and more control in the team, people had really high expectations, reducing acidity at work, having people feel more safe, more empowered, and really easing on the pressure and the fear and the strain that's there. And it works for the most part, I would say, but then all of a sudden it backfires. People are saying, this is too much for me. This is too much. Yeah. And our teams are saying, I appreciate that I have to go to my boss anymore for a decision. But you know what? I went to my boss before. I knew him or her. I knew how to approach her. I kind of knew the expectations. It's a one-on-one and I come up with a decision. Now it's not so easy. Now I got to talk to everybody in the team. Or even worse, I have to get the team together and facilitate a discussion under peers. How am I going to do this? And what if people don't like my idea? But I believe in this idea. Do I need everybody's approval? And does everybody have to agree? So there's a whole load of different strain that is now transported to the teams. And I hear it from teams that get a little bit desperate, even if they try to do their best. And then what I often see, fortunately, is they come up with some ideas they think are great ideas, and they take the ownership, they make it happen, only to them, you know, in a genre fit.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long distance relationship, becoming a first step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Or looking at numbers, or randomly hearing that's not what management wanted. Okay, well, that kind of served the wrong purpose. Oh. That was beside the point, guys. It's never what I intended you to do. Ooh, okay. That is bad. This is people stepping up out of their comfort zone, thinking they're safe, acting based on it, just to get a slap in the face afterwards. Happens all the time. Something again. If anybody in the audience is confronted with that kind of situation, especially the leader wouldn't know, right? Because the team doesn't go up and say, what? No, the team just gets silent. They stop the engagement. They don't take initiative next time, right? You should see a slow decline of engagement, but it's fine because nobody complains. Actually, they complain much less. You know, before that, they had all those annoying ideas and complained about restraints and impediments. Now I don't hear anything. So things are going good. No, they're not. You screwed up, leader. You failed to set them up for success. You did the exact opposite. And ignored again. Look at the TC model. Make that, get that thing clear. But even if you do the right thing, and that's the question I think you were getting at. Let's say people are really enabled to act with more autonomy and ownership. There's still going to be some people that say, either again, that's too much team dynamics for me to deal with. I find it has to be respected. There is such a thing as personal discretion as well. And then you have the second thing that people are saying, it's wearing me down. I feel a load of responsibility on my shoulders I didn't feel before, and it's bringing me down. It's heavy to carry. And people that have the affinity to feel this, those are the people that are pretty vulnerable in taking on then too much responsibility. We have a team that is self-managed, so you have all the nice team dynamics we know, social loafing, you know, all the good stuff. People just, not everybody's as hard well working, they might have different working ethics, etc. But somebody has to compensate for it. There's no leader. I'd say, wait a minute, not on my watch. It's difficult for me to steer it from inside out. And then you have the expectations. No, you decide. Okay, but that's a big decision to take. And that could mean change our profits and loss. Or my favorite, no, you decide. I heard complaints about the colleague. You decide. Do you want to fire him?
You.
It's all up to you, right, to decide it. And this is something that is simply a reality. We have, in the process of a traditional organization, there is a self-selection in place. Who are the people that develop into a leadership position in a traditional setting? We can actually look at this from plenty of studies. We have how the average personality profile changes, the higher up I go in the hierarchy, etc. Those things happen for a reason. Obviously. And now we put people into responsibility that might not have the personality, stamina, or, you know, I don't want to always put it on the person. It might just not be the right time for them. They might have a very challenging phase in their private life, or maybe they, you know, are engaged in a continuous education. They don't have the headspace now to think about decisions at work. Their intrinsic motivation might be of a different nature. They like programming. That's, you know, they get on their screen and bam, they're in the flow. They program. That's all they want to do. At the end of the day, they go happy. It gives them, you know, it's something that gives them energy. And now all of a sudden, hey, here's an important decision. Can you please sit on the table? We want to hear all the voices. We want to make sure we have a consensus on how, you know, we reprioritize the backlog or what we're going to do next. People might say, my goodness, let me do what I do best, programming. I don't want to sit in this room. I don't want to hear those discussions. I don't want to be part of it. And that's something we do forget with all the good intentions behind new work, behind agility, behind organizational occupational psychology. People are different. They have different expectations. They have different limits. So what I want to say with it, it's not that easy, right? There's not a perfect solution. Always have to. Doesn't matter if you operate in a highly traditional organization or in a highly progressive organization. You always are responsible to look at the individual. How do they deal with that setup? How do they deal in the environment? What does the team dynamics do? What are the leadership dynamics in the company? There's no solution, no organizational structure or setup that would save you that kind of work.
Dr. Stephanie, how important do you think it is for professionals, doesn't matter which level they are in or what position they have, to be aware of their own purpose and vision. And by the way, people mix between them. You might clarify the differences, because I saw also this is something that you focused on, how important for them to understand it from a personal level in order for them to make it easier for their organization.
Not sure I understood. Let's
say it again. If you know your purpose, you know why are you... purpose and vision.
Okay, let's talk about it. Yeah, let's do that. Why? Because it's a huge, huge red flag. Something I sometimes see in young organizations, really progressive. We're all equal footing here, right? Or ein Level, as we say in German. We are all aligned, right, behind the purpose. It feels like a big family, such a support. And we really pitch in for each other. You know what? That's great. You can do this if you want to. But there is a huge overstepping of boundaries here, which can become unhealthy very fast. So my individual purpose is my individual purpose, but out. It's none of your business. It's not. I can work in an organization where, for example, they say, well, their purpose is to make production more sustainable. It's cool. I might think, well, it makes sense. Or maybe I feel like some of my values match up with the idea of sustainability. That's great. Is this my personal purpose? Is that why I'm here? Do I even know why I'm here, right? Purpose, for heaven's sake. What's the nicest meaning? This goes a little bit deep for an organization, for something that I earn my money from, right? I still go home and have to answer to myself, not to my boss. So speaking of or the discussions around, even when I read about workshop offers, aligning the purpose and or creating this company purpose out of our individual purposes, these are absolute, from a psychological view, no-go zones across boundaries. Why is it unhealthy? Because it creates an environment where I feel I'm 100% part of that system. Every inch of my body supports the system, so I'm going to give it all. I have worked late. You know, I don't mind working or staying. Sleep at the sofa. But that's not all. So if my manager communicates a decision, which we all, of course, agreed on, he asked for our permission because we all think alike anyway, right? So why would we disagree? I feel like I'm all in. I cannot contradict. I can't. Because then my colleague is going to look at me. I thought you're on board. I thought you're all in for our purpose. Why are you so critical? Why do you second guess this? Why did you take a different decision? Well, because I thought it makes sense. That's not our purpose. And the way you did it, we don't just go ahead and do this. I don't feel comfortable with this, right? You got this whole emotional and social and even biotic weight that's placed into the center of an organization. So here I would very clearly draw the line. No, let's put this aside. What we can do, and it's highly effective, it's a different book, a German book, Moderne Führung und Selbstorganisation, there we address it from a different perspective. So I am in an organization, me as an individual, I make a choice. So now I see that things change a little bit. My role before was defined pretty narrow. What's my job? What's not my job? And I see there's some change going on. I appreciate it. I know more what's going on in the different departments. I'm involved in some strategic discussions. This is fun. I like it. I feel like I can come up with ideas now. I can also, it's much easier for me now to tell my boss, hey, you know what? This project team, I think I can contribute something and add value. You know what? Do this. Take half a day. Go. Do it. It's great. This is, you know, making the organization more flexible. Now is the time where I can sit back and reflect and say, I guess my role grew, I as a person can have a much bigger impact within my organization than I could before new work, before agility. Now I can start thinking, what would I like to, what kind of impact would I like to have? What are my values? What do I want to fight for in this organization? What do I want to bring to the table? How as a project team, after I supported them, feel different? This is really how I can, as an individual, and it's also work I do pretty often with new leaders that struggle in their role, they struggle with power dynamics, hierarchic thinking, they don't feel comfortable in that new situation. It's fine, those are not necessarily the bad guys, right? Or ladies moving up, those are good people. But what helps them a lot is exactly what you suggest. Sit down, let's talk about your professional purpose. What do you stand for? What's important for you? Look at 5 years from now and people reflect, well, this person took over the job or this person joined my team. What change happened? What do you want people to say? And that's, when the people start to develop ideas, when you can see passion growing, they come up with really cool ideas, or they say, really nice things. When you work with somebody that, motivated, and then you say, I see there's no opportunities for you. Yes. And you know what? 5 years back, I worked in the job and I did this and this and this. Again, experience. It could be useful today. Go for it. What do you want to achieve? And if I can now sit down, think about what are my goals? I connect them with my purpose, with my values, or motivation. I don't care. I could also connect them with the business need. I simply feel very interesting. Or I think it's very interesting. Kind of, seems like a cool thing to play with. I would enjoy doing this. Great. Let's do this. Let's get back to what you really want to do and how you can contribute in a win-win situation. You do some alignment work to make sure it's actually aligned with the discussion we had before, whether the company would like to go or what the people need, the customer, the colleagues. And then this exercise is very good. It's very good. It's very healthy because people feel empowered. They feel that, for the most part, they took their own decisions. It's their goals. They formulate. They run with it. They're highly committed. But again, it's a commitment I made. I didn't commit myself into something.
Mm. Are you feeling stuck at work? Disconnected from yourself or your team? If you are searching for more meaning in what you do, I am offering a free 30-minute call to help you clarify your purpose, your values, your vision, and your mission. Connect with me on LinkedIn and let's take the first step together. Dr. Stephanie, I know it might not be easy to grasp the difference between purpose and vision and values, etc., but from what I searched for and understand, that once you have a clear vision as an individual or also as a team, then you will open up lots of opportunities and possibilities and collaboration, creativity to achieve so much. So how much do you think it is important and easy, could be easy sometimes, to just be open and experiment with it and play with it to see, okay, what could be the best possible scenario if you do this and this? Where do we see ourselves if nothing could stop us? How do you see this from psychological perspective?
It's great. It's very, makes a lot of sense to do this for several reasons. So I'm currently preparing a workshop with a client where we'll do something very similar. We have the company's vision, and now we're going to sit together and create the vision for that business unit. Obviously linked, right? Kind of want to be aligned with the company's vision, because then it can be much bigger. There's much more weight behind the company's vision. And now what we'll do is very similar to how you describe it. We play a little bit with this thought, right? This is where the company would see its future. A vision is abstract. A vision is highly diverse. Maybe a little unrealistic, but it's fine. It's a vision. It's something that anchors our thinking. And then what happens is what you describe. we start being creative. You start removing the cognitive barriers, self-limiting beliefs, or even, you know, professional limiting, self-limiting beliefs, and we start thinking big. This is very powerful. If nothing could stop us, I like your question, where would we end up? You see the North Star. Can we shoot beyond that North Star? I think we can, right? Our business unit is going to compel this company even further than what, you know, the company thought was possible. That's when energy comes up. So psychologically, this is very nice. We start removing the barrier. We start thinking in solutions and opportunities. We can be creative. We tap into implicit knowledge. We tap into some maybe non-conformist thinking in new ideas, new ways. It triggers us. It tickles us. Say, wow, I didn't even think I had come up with it. But now that you mentioned it, I got this crazy idea. And the fun, it's so much fun and so much energy. Also so much more creativity in the output, or that stuff makes sense. We get good solutions from it. So I like it a lot. And what happens is the creative co-creation in the room, if we address it that way. So it supports the team spirit. It teaches the team how much further we get if we support each other in, you know, solution-oriented thinking versus criticizing. I can't, there's a risk. All this has to have its space. And now you ask psychologically, this is really good. So we do this, right? We take a day or half a day and then we're all excited. And then you go to lunch or you meet people the next morning and maybe they're not that excited anymore. And I said, what happened? I actually had a leader call me and said, Ms. Puckett, we had this crazy day and everyone was so excited. A week later, I don't feel this anymore. What happened? So I was involved. It's not my fault. But might have happened. People started thinking and realizing, what did we just agree on? Did we really just agree on those impossible goals? That's a step too big for us. So now we start doubting. We start being a little anxious, being afraid, overcommitted, also being afraid that we raised unrealistic expectations we might not be able to meet. Oh, you know, second round talking to your team. That's part of the vision. That is the vision. It's unrealistic to some degrees. Our shoes are too big. But you know what? We'll have a chance. We have a good chance. Some chance. And if we don't, isn't this beautiful saying, if you shoot for the moon, even if you miss, you end up in the stars. So around these lines, but to take those concerns very serious, we're not going to put unrealistic demands on the organization. This was never intended. We'll look at what each of us can contribute. If we have to reprioritize, that's a very frequent concern, right? We get this cool thing, but to be honest, I'm full. My agenda is full. I got all those things I need to take care of. We're not going to load such an important thing just on top of somebody's already full schedule. This is leadership in action. We have to reprioritize. We have to also decide what we stop doing to not, get this unrealistic and unhealthy demand. And then you have some people that are very sensitive about those things that feel the commitment and they want to really contribute. And they do. And then halfway, maybe after 6 months, they say, I'm exhausted. I don't know what happened, but I was so excited. Now I got a stomach ache when I think about Monday. It's just not, I don't know what to do because it's the first thing they do. So people I talk with in a professional psychological counseling
center. This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Questions that are very engaged, very committed, usually high performance. And then all of a sudden, something gives them tiredness, overwhelms them. Panic attacks. All of a sudden, out of nothing, they stumble over their own words. They freeze in a meeting. Things that never happened before, which this seduction of that vision and the felt responsibility. We have to do more. We have to not even think big. We have to act bigger. That just strains. Felt responsibility that something gives in. Marty didn't watch out for those people. In a self-organizing team, sometimes you're lucky, you have good colleagues. Not always. In a self-organizing team, me as a consultant, I can't go in there and hold somebody accountable. I can't say, hey, colleague X, did you not see this coming? Why me? Right? There are the five others in this team. Yeah, I kind of have a point there. It's a problem, right? It's one of those nice team dynamics we face in that kind of setting. If I have a leader, I can take that person aside. I can say, you might have missed something very important here. Let's get to work. Let's make sure that person can go back to the workplace and again contribute the way they did that before. So that's the dark side, if you want. But for the most part, working around vision is a great exercise. For everybody, for the company, for the people, for the outcome, for the spirit. It can be a lot of fun exercises.
Mm. Dr. Stephanie, while you're talking, you reminded me of something that also I realized as a pattern for most people I know that, and me including myself also, I used to do this a lot in the past and I'm aware of it now, that people tend to think small and won't expect from themselves to do so much. Instead of, you can think big, like you can have a big vision, and then you can act small. I see today I can do 1, 2, 3 things, and that could be something that will lead me there, but I don't have to be there today, you know?
That's very good, a very good aspect. And you know what I described, this initial excitement and people starting to get nervous and all that, some of it goes down to exactly what you said. You got this big goal now. That's totally overwhelming. That's this big mountain in front of, how am I going to get up there? Now, if I just say, you know, it's great to know where we want to end up, but now let's look at the next step. What's going to get us just a tiny bit towards this goal? Like you said, let's talk measures. Let's talk what I'm going to do different tomorrow. What's the smaller thing I'll do tomorrow that's going to take us one step closer to this big goal? That is exactly one of those leadership measures you got to do with this person that's overwhelmed, to sit down and say, that's one thing. It gets us a little closer. There's this illustration with a ladder, and then standing in front of the ladder, and the gaps between the different boards is too wide, right? And then it just looks like impossible thing to do. You just add some boards, and then all of a sudden you start growing on that ladder. It reaches as high as before, but now it's doable, because I think and act in the small steps, but not losing that big picture. Like you said, not losing this out of focus.
Dr. Stephanie, I'm loving this conversation, and the more you mention things, the more questions I have, and I have already so many questions. It's so exciting, and I think we can have another discussion if you are open for it. And for me, actually, it's a challenge now to pick from the questions. I'm going to ask you now one thing. You might share a story from your work, your life, that transformed you and still had an impact on you until now.
So when I left university and I started working in a smaller consulting company, I was relatively insecure, because who am I? I'm a psychologist. Yeah, organizational psychology. I couldn't even read balance sheet. I couldn't follow when my clients talked about their market strategy. I couldn't. So where would I come from, right? And sitting there as a psychologist. And then I realized it's a pretty good space to be in, because at the end of the day, I witnessed discussions and then I heard people speaking. So I would hear the conversations within the team. I would have people address me, pulling me aside, saying, you know, I struggle with this and that. What's your opinion? Or I would be able to maybe present feedback to management or hear management complain about things. And I would sit there and think, did you not say that? Why did you not tell the person? Why did you never ask for that? Why was this never spoken between, you know, between the actors in the field? And this phenomena of unspokenness, of desires, expectations, fears, hopes, struggles, that leads to so much lost effectiveness, to so many, unfortunately, I encounter of people that took very hard hits within their career. Unnecessarily, would we have facilitated a conversation that brought those things to the table 2 years earlier, they would be in a different place now. And I had those early epiphanies. I see it every day, every day. Unspoken words and the damage they do. So this is something that at that time made me feel good, because I feel like, you know what? I'm a psychologist. I'm trained to understand human nature. I understand motives and needs and psychological dynamics. I know what power does to people and how people react to power and all these things, you know, communication. How do we communicate? How do we, you know, the different modes? What's nonverbal communication? All these kind of things. They help me fill in this gap. And that is something that I would say up until today keeps me always on my toes. It keeps me always alert and watching out what I see. It's easy to, like when I work with companies and leaders that are pretty cool, very performant, really smart, and stuff is moving in the right direction, I tend to say, you know, all voices, let's go. And I just continuously hold, you know, take myself back, take a step back and start to listen, to look for those dynamics that will have a stumble earlier, you know, sooner or later. That is something that I learned, I still learn. I'm usually fortunate enough to know what happened to people. There was a disagreement, people lost their job, etc. Often enough that people will trust me, they reach out to tell me the story, right? So I can constantly try to second guess, did I estimate it correctly? Did I see the dynamics correctly? Did I read the person correctly? So I can always, well, not always, unfortunately, but often circle back to validate my gut feeling or my intuition. And that keeps me alert. That also, I think, is probably the most important thing that I bring to the table, especially working with people that they got the strategy. Like, it might be able to ask a good question, but they outsmart me, if I can admit it. You know, estimating the market needs or knowing which direction they need to go to. Totally, I'm fine, but I can sit there and watch for the dynamics they might overlook, and then help them facilitate the conversations that otherwise would not take place. That would be the thing.
Dr. Stephanie, you talked about how you might overlook things. You also mentioned before blind spots. I know that you also talked in the past about sunk cost fallacy, talked about cognitive dissonance. If you talk about all of these, let's say either biases or blind spots, what are the one thing you will pick from all of them and you see it's the one that is mostly underestimated? You can talk about other cognitive biases. Yeah. And it's important to be aware of at work.
Yeah. So, you know, let's take all those biases. Some are just, or when we talk about a bias, it's something that is kind of connected to human nature. So we all have it to some degree, which means I can kind of control it, right? We can address it in a group. And I find this relatively easy to deal with. But if we go to the core of individual biases, that's where it gets tricky. And, you know, my doctorate, I used personality assessments and leadership perception, management diagnostics, kind of things that really took me down the differential personality psychology part. And it's an absolutely fascinating topic. So when in doubt, and I don't know what biases are at work, or I feel like I'm dealing with people, we all have blind spots, right? It's just part of our game. But do we know our blind spots? And a really good way of looking at it, we can give some bias trainings. I do this in assessment context, right? So I try to reduce biases in assessing, observing. We can do all this. But the true bias is based and anchored in our personality. That's where it really is. How do I feel, think, perceive the world differently from somebody else? That has the biggest impact on how I engage with my environment, why I keep encountering situations that make me think, why? This is people telling me, but you explain that to me. Why? Why is it always the same? It's always the same for you, right? How about the others? What do they say? No, they don't have that problem. Let's look at you then. What to do with you? With your perception sometimes. It doesn't happen. It's here. It's in your perception. And why is it? It has to do with your personality. It has to do with, you know, your history and all this. Also your personality. So something I just really like doing a lot, especially in executive coaching, right? Where I'm highly dependent. What does a person tell me? What's going on? How do I can't always, you know, call their boss or call their peers and validate things. I have to rely on what you tell me. That's your truth. It's important. I got to accept. It's your truth. This is your reality. But in order to help you, I got to know your biases. I got to be able to correct, you know, to try to get it a little bit more objective or try to add different perspectives. Now, if I got your personality profile, it takes me a long way. I see your tendencies and I see how your perception, your preferences and your tendencies might differ from the vast population. Right? When you tell me about people in your organization that sound a little off the scale, is that your perception or is it true? They might be just right average people, but you are off the scale. These kind of things, that's my favorite bias to work with. Again, we all have it. It's fun. It, you know, makes the life and it makes the work diverse. It adds to the outcome. It's right. We should, I believe, that everybody can benefit on simply knowing, you know, where do you stand, your perception, feelings, interpretation compared to other people. Just having that piece of self reflection or strategic self insight, that's probably the most important tool, especially in leadership, right? Where your business is a people business. So you gotta know what kind of person are you.
While you are listening to the Core Impact podcast, please take a moment to pause and share with me. How do you feel? Are you enjoying the conversation? Feeling inspired or something else? I would love to know your feelings in the comments.
I think time is running up. I haven't asked you half of the questions I wanted to. I'm going to pick one of them now. You said before that work-related stress increases turnover by 50%. So do you have any quick wins for leaders to reduce stress and return talents from this perspective?
Well, it's an interesting topic, which I was more heavily involved a few years ago, reducing retention risk, reducing turnover. For example, by, you know, taking some measures to reduce stress, there are other measures to take and focus on. Turns out that changed a little bit. So now customers or companies are not asking me, can you help us to reduce turnover? They're asking me, how do we change our culture that more turnover means naturally? It's the difference. Beside the point, To take measures to reduce stress is always good and always important. Now, there are good inventories out there. There's a lot of research. What are the most common stress factors? If I'm a leader, I'm concerned and I feel like the stress levels are high, I can, with my team together, go through such checklists. You know, how is this for you? How is that for you? I can rely back on fundamental things like, do you feel like you are in control of your work? And do you feel like you can set boundaries or not? Do you feel like the demands or the expectations might be too high? I can ask those questions and then see, where does it take us? I can look systemically. A big thing I'm seeing is this plus one bias, especially when things aren't going well. We tend to add something. We add another project team. We add another organizational structure. We add another KPI, whatever you have, right? We just basically increase the load. I see the same in stress management organizations where people cannot take a step back and have just breathe. What do the HR does, right? They call me and say, we need the training, or e-learning would be better because people are short on time. Really? So somebody that's, comes home at 9 o'clock, you want to then ask them to dial into an e-learning? This plus one bias. And that's, I think, the best way of reducing stress is to reduce load, to do a minus one bias, take something off their plates. And that's something, can be waste. Awesome. That's where, some methods around agility come in pretty handy, just being very consequent in reducing waste every step of the way, or maybe also taking some harder decisions around prioritizing. That would be, I think this would be my number one advice. If the stress is too high, sometimes it is correlated with a workload, right? That's the first thing to tackle. If you say you can't, I respect this. I know sometimes we have to pull through it. Everybody has to carry a workload in order to help that organization. Then we look a little deeper, right? Then we can go things like I told you, the job characteristics model. Those are all good frameworks to try to go in this checklist and see, where can we tweak things to just ease. If we can't ease the workload, we can certainly ease the perception, the feeling of the stress and the emotional strain we put on people. That's a good way of addressing it.
Stephanie, I enjoyed the conversation with you. As I said, throughout, I'm still, of course, curious to know more about you, but I will just give you now the space, as you were talking about this space, let's say, to say whatever you like to share in the end, anything you like listeners to focus on in the end, or any message you'd like to leave in the end, or maybe something that you wanted to say but you haven't talked about.
Okay, yeah. So, talking about human dynamics and human nature and how we get all caught up in those things, and we all at points lose the ability to just step back and take a good look or reflect on things. What I would really like to encourage everybody, it's hard to do that by yourself. So, reach out to friends, reach out to colleagues, take that step back together, get feedback from other people, ask them for their perspective or for their perception of the situation. Don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to, read that, or it doesn't matter which direction you go, just simply express, here's the situation I'm in. How can I get out of that? Or how can you help me? Reach out to people, ask for help, tackle things together. You don't have to take it. Anything alone, nothing, right? Also not as a leader. It's not solely up to you to make things successful. You're in it together with your team. Don't be afraid to reach out and get people involved and ask for help. I think that would be the one thing I would leave you with.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stephanie. And I wish you all the best, and we stay in touch.
Thank you. Best for you.
Do you feel inspired by this conversation? If that's the case, please share that with me, write me a comment, and share it with a friend that you know will benefit from this podcast. Core Impact Podcast is on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all other major platforms.